Hello, hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of Power Up and Game. I'm your host, Michael, and joining me, as always, is Taylor. Taylor, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I am doing pretty good. I am ready to go ahead and get into our show. We are kind of on a time crunch, unfortunately. So, how are you doing?
I am doing all right. I'm actually getting set to go to Texas for a family gathering, and I have to disappoint my puppy right now because of me, we're recording a little late, and by this time, my puppy will be on his second walk of the day. And so, not only did I hold you up, I had to hold him up. So, I'm sorry, it's everybody.
You have to go to Texas. I have to go fix me something to eat after we record. Similar problems, okay? So,
I don't know if that's similar problems.
Haven't eaten all day, so I'm kind of starving. Ready to go ahead and get into this episode. We got a lot of cool stuff to talk about, I think, in this episode. Especially our first story.
Yeah, I was going to say that first story is something that you and I have both been looking forward to.
Came out of nowhere for me.
All right.
I don't know about you.
Oh, man. To be honest, I was actually going to text you and be like, oh, man, did you see this? But I saw her notes. I was like, yeah, he saw it. I thought it was fake at first. I thought it was fake at first, but we'll get into that in a moment. So Taylor, how about you go ahead and get us to a disclaimer so we can go ahead and get right into it.
Don't mind if I do, Michael. We got a few stories of the week and a movie review today. You probably could tell by the title of what movie we're going to be reviewing. But real quick, we just want to say that you can find sources for all the topics we're going over today down in the description of this episode. We do that to give out proper credit, and if anyone wants to read further about the topics we cover. Also, it's important to note that you should always take rumors or reports that we cover with a grain of salt until they are officially confirmed or denied. Of course, some reports and rumors will be more reliable, but nothing is 100% in the gaming industry until it is properly announced, and sometimes, even then, it might get canned in the future. Lastly, we are just two dumb idiots who love video games and love talking about video games. These are just our opinions. They don't necessarily reflect the opinions of anyone on our team or over at the Nerd Stash. We'd love to hear your thoughts on everything we're going to be discussing today, but please just try to remain respectful. With that disclaimer out of the way, Michael, mind getting into our stories of the week?
Oh my goodness, yes, we're going to start off with the first big story that Taylor and I have been excited for since, late last year? The first story trailer for Marvel 1943, Rise of Hydra, has dropped. As I just said in the title, the first story trailer for the newly titled Marvel 1943, Rise of Hydra, has been revealed. This is the Captain America / Black Panther game coming from former Uncharted figurehead and co-creator Amy Hennig. Hennig now runs Skydance New Media, the studio behind Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra. Sadly, we didn't get any gameplay from this trailer, but nonetheless, this is our first real look at the game. Well, not really counting the initial teaser trailer that didn't show anything substantial. So Taylor, getting right into this, what are your thoughts on this trailer, and are you still excited for this game?
Let's get the bad part out of the way. I'm not a fan of the title.
Really? I like it. But I can't wait to hear why you don't like it, but I like it. But go ahead.
Well, it's just, I don't know, it's just awkward to me. Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra. I know it's because Captain America and Black Panther are like the co-leads here, so you don't know what really to call it. Like Marvel Heroes Rise of Hydra wasn't available? Something simple like that?
Isn't Heroes like their mobile game?
Yeah, but I guess you could reuse it. I don't see a reason why you couldn't.
I could see people thinking, oh, it's another mobile game kind of deal.
Captain America versus Black Panther, Dawn of Justice. I mean, that was available.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. Batman v Superman is still kind of...
No, I got it wrong. Hold on. I'm sorry. Captain America v Black Panther, Dawn of Avenging.
Somehow your titles are getting worse, Taylor. I'm kind of glad they don't go to you for these titles.
Other than the title, though, I thought this trailer was spectacular. I really liked what I saw here. It is no gameplay, so that sucks. But the story that we got, I'm very intrigued by it. I think the character models look fantastic. As a nitpick, I would have liked to see Captain America just a little bit more swole. I think that's the Chris Evans effect for me. But even I really like, again, that's a nitpick there. But even then, like, his character model was fantastic. I loved everything about this trailer. I think it is...
It looked a lot better than the Avengers games.
I didn't want to make that comparison and be like, oh, yeah, this Captain America looks much better than the Avengers game. But he does. These look like actual people. Which is a huge bonus.
You know, it's weird because for me and a lot of people, Marvel's Avengers, the video game, that looked like somebody's 40-year-old dad trying to cosplay as Captain America. So I guess he looked too much like a real person, if that makes any sense. But the one in Black Panther and the Captain America Black Panther game, yeah, I get what you're saying. He looks more like he fits, like he belongs there.
Yeah, this feels to me, and this might be because it's Amy Hennig at the helm, it feels like an Uncharted-esque adventure game. But instead of Nathan Drake, they were like, well, we got the Marvel license. Let's use Black Panther and Captain America during World War II. It's a logical story that makes sense. And man, it seems very intriguing. It really does. I'm excited to see how much we're going to play as both characters, what the gameplay is going to look like. It seems like there's going to be a showdown at some point during the story between the two of them. Who are we going to play as during this showdown? Like, are we going to get to choose? Is it going to be more story-driven to where we just play as both sides? I don't know, man. But this is something that I think came out of nowhere. I think for both of us, we looked at Amy Hennig's Marvel game and was like, ah, this is still a while away. Haven't heard anything about it. All of a sudden, this trailer drops, says it's coming in 2025, and now I got something near my top of my wish list, right below GTA 6. In 2025, yeah. And it's Marvel 1943, Rise of Hydra. So what are your thoughts on this trailer?
Who would have thought looking forward to 2025 would be the thing for 2024? It's not like, oh, man, I can't wait to see what games in 2024. It's like, oh, man, I can't wait for 2025 now. Because, yeah, you're right. Having this in GTA 6 just dropping in 25, whew, I don't care what comes out this year. Those are, like, the games we're going to want to talk about this year. They're going to be the games that we're going to want to see this year.
Michael, have you seen Community?
I've seen bits and pieces, but I never actually watched a full season of it.
This is going to sound random, but season 4 of Community was widely panned. A whole lot of stuff behind the scenes. In season 5 and beyond, there was like a meta joke saying like season 4 was the gas leak year. Like, nobody knew. everybody went crazy. It was the gas leak year. This is the gas leak year for the gaming industry.
I mean, man, that kind of sucks in how last year was really good. It's like, I guess we all need our season 4 then.
We all need our Community season 4. 2024 is that for us, hopefully.
But as for the trailer, anybody who watched the show or listens to the show knows that I'm not a fan of pre-rendered, even in-engine trailers. But I did like this one because it did give us a sense of what the game is about. And, you know, it did give us the faces and the voice of Captain America and a Black Panther. And I think so far they're pretty good. I'm like, oh, man, I actually want to play this game now. I want to see more, but I want to see a gameplay trailer. But to know that they do have a solid title for the game, Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra, I like that. It gives you a sense of the time it takes and which part of the Marvel universe it takes. It takes pretty much where we first find out about Hydra. So we know whatever universe this is setting up, because the name like Marvel 1943 is definitely trying to set something up. We do know Hydra is going to be a big part of it. It's a cool way to introduce Captain America and Black Panther now. So in any future game, we already know Captain America gets frozen, whether it's going to be in this game or maybe even in Marvel 1945 Captain America or something or whatever. We know that'll happen soon. They've already established Black Panther, which means they've already going to establish Wakanda in this universe. And I like that now. I like that they're doing it all now, because it makes sense that Black Panther would get involved with something outside of Wakanda if it's affecting them, because one, we already know it's Hydra. Hydra has resources from all over the world. And two, they even said it in the trailer that, yeah, the material that they use, I already forgot what they called it.
Vibranium.
Yeah, vibranium. Because he called it vibranium aluminum or alloy or something like that. So they already established that vibranium is already out in the open. So we already know that Stark and company has access to it somehow, which means maybe even Claw is involved somehow. Or
see, I don't think it's gonna be that far.
Well, no, but I'm saying like it's kind of cool that these things are already kind of established right away. So they don't have to spend like 20 games trying to explain things. Like, okay, it's already part of the world.
Yeah. What I would probably say is I really like Captain America, the First Avenger. I think it's an underrated MCU movie. I think it's great. But knowing everything we know now about like the history of the MCU, I do wonder if Marvel does look back at that movie and go like, man, we could have done something with the Black Panther character there. We could have had
like, oh, you know, they do
exactly what they're doing here. We could have had like T'Challa's grandfather in this, and we could have saw more history about the Black Panther title and had those two interact. It would have been really cool. I don't know how this came about, but this just feels like such a MCU Elseworlds that also feels like it's just its own thing. That's what I love about it. Like, look, none of the characters are trying to copy the MCU. But still, this feels like something that I think would fit in that kind of like, oh, we're going to do a cinematic universe. This would fit in the cinematic universe.
Yeah, I like that they're not trying to make Captain America look like Chris, that it does look like his own character. I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. But I just looked it up. The Black Panther is King T'Chanda. So I don't know. So I'm pretty sure that is his grandfather, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, since it is World War II, having his older grandfather in there, that'd be kind of cool. And it makes me wonder if they do any more games where all of this connects. If Cap will ever bring up T'Challa, like, oh yeah, I fought your grandfather.
Yeah, I fought your grandfather. Like that respect there, it adds layers. So it makes me wonder, like, okay, what's this story gonna be? Is this something we can get a awesome sequel out of in the present day? Do they plan? Is this just a one-off? This could also just be a one-off game with a cool concept.
Yeah, you know what? If they do that, I hope that this proves to Marvel that, hey, maybe we can get like more cinematic games other than Spider-Man out there. Because so far, it really does seem like Insomniac Games is the only one who's making a good Marvel game. Yeah, so with this, it's Skydance, so they have a little bit of money. So it's kind of cool that, hey, yeah, they could afford getting more Marvel characters. And I think that can help prove the whole, you can make a universe out of anything if you actually try. And with Amy, oh my goodness. If she keeps pulling the stops that she was with Uncharted, we're going to want a whole Marvel video game universe just from her and have her be the Kevin Feige of Marvel video games.
Which is why I like, regardless if this is a one-off or the beginning is something for Skydance, why I like this time period and these two characters being the leads. Because not only is it a cool concept for just a one-off game, but if you plan to make this a Spider-Man franchise level cinematic thing, you can do that. These are two characters for Steve Rogers and the Black Panther title that's eventually going to go to T'Challa. It adds, like we were talking about, the layers for that relationship. It adds more context of, hey, here's how it basically started in our gaming universe. And again, like I was saying, it's not the MCU, but I think what it really, where it really also works is it's a story concept that I think people who watched MCU and loved MCU could go, yeah, I could buy into that. That would be a really cool movie. So from the outside looking in, without seeing any gameplay, I've loved everything I've seen from it.
they've got me captured. I am interested so much. This is the beginning of the MGU. I'm down for it.
Well, not to bring you down, Michael, but we gotta talk about Overwatch 2.
Yeah, you did this to me. You did this on purpose.
You're the one who pitched this story.
Yeah, but you could have had us talk about this first. You did this to me on purpose.
Overwatch 2 will be making its heroes free upon release when the game's 10th season drops in April, meaning no more instances where new heroes are locked behind the battle pass. But that's not the only news regarding Overwatch 2 over the past week. In a report from Kotaku, former anonymous Blizzard developer spoke with the publication and spoke about the issues working on Overwatch 2 and its PvE mode. A lot has been said about Overwatch's promises of a true PvE story mode ever since Blizzard initially announced the mode, and it seemed as if Overwatch 2 was being made, at least primarily, to add this PvE element to the franchise. But it just didn't work out. What was initially planned for Overwatch 2 story mode never came to fruition, and now it just seems like the game's current PvE model isn't working out either. Let's take a look at the Kotaku report, and we're going to be reading it out verbatim for full context and transparency. Again, links to everything we're talking about today, including this report, can be found in the description. This part is essentially these anonymous developers talking about the intent behind PvE, and a phrase that was tossed around called Blizzard quality. You're going to be hearing that phrase a lot here in the next few minutes. Quote, according to a former developer, Blizzard's plan was to release Overwatch 2's campaign in multiple content drops over several years. But the project had been tied up in pipeline issues dating back to more than 5 years. The team was told that the intent was to drop 3 missions around every 18 months. They add that while the entire campaign may not be ready to ship yet, every mission is reportedly in some degree of completion at Blizzard. According to that same source, those levels range from fully playable to still in concept. Work on the campaign missions was apparently held up in pursuit of the nebulous thing called Blizzard quality, a term used to describe a standard the company aspires to. According to one source, this became a crutch that was frequently used to avoid making calls that would move the development of story missions forward. Blizzard quality is just a justification to essentially piss about forever and ever, redoing the same work over and over, the source said. Some executive goes, but is it Blizzard quality? It's always leadership or game directors deciding they need to spend extra time. So honestly, if they could just have found if they just could have made any kind of decisions, the game could have showed years ago. Another source said this reliance on Blizzard quality may have contributed to frequent iterations on the original concept, but that wasn't the only issue the team faced while trying to work on Overwatch 2's story missions. Overwatch's PvE gameplay just turned out to be very difficult to adapt for PvE, mostly because of how differentiated and PvP-oriented the hero kits are, the source told Kotaku via text message, end quote. In our opinion, the Kotaku report really paints a picture of a development cycle that was ultimately just directionless, and I think that's the nicest thing we can kind of say about it. Adding more people to the team to help with development didn't seem to be a potential answer either. Here's another excerpt from the Kotaku report. Quote, PvP was understood to be the core of the game's success, a source said. Everybody still cared about PvE, though, and that includes team leadership. According to one source, the argument was made internally that the Overwatch 2 team would need to double in size to give both PvP and PvE the resources Blizzard believed they needed. But there was dissent on that front. They used to say all the time that we would essentially need 2 400-people teams, one for PvP and one for PvE, to have the personnel needed, a source said. I don't think that's true. There were already too many cooks, end quote. As for where the mode stands now, it doesn't look good. It was said the first batch of missions didn't perform well, and layoffs at Microsoft did affect the Overwatch 2 team, including those involved in the game's PvE elements. So, from the outside looking in, it appears that Overwatch 2's PvE, which again was one of, if not the primary component, Blizzard pushed as their rationale behind making another Overwatch game, is now up in the air. Michael, you are our resident Overwatch fan. This has got to be some sad news for you.
I've been critical of Overwatch 2 since its announcement. And I even went on the let's wait and see approach when they're like, oh, we're going to do PvE. We're going to do a story mode. I was like, okay, well, it looks cool. The concept is cool. But until you guys actually prove to me that what you're doing is more than just, oh, here's an extra mode, but we're going to charge you an extra $30 for it or whatever. Because that's what it was going for. You had to buy like a founder pack basically or something that was like $29.99 that came with access to the PvE when it was supposed to happen, some Overwatch coins, their premium coins, and some skins. And I was like, I don't know. I don't trust you guys because this is nonsense. Why couldn't you just add the PvE stuff into Overwatch 1? And I would buy that. But apparently, you know, it was because, oh, we have a new engine and yada, yada, yada. So whatever. So I've always been critical of Overwatch 2. And the more that they screw up with Overwatch 2, the more I wonder why. Why was this a thing? Why did it have to be a thing? How much of this have you guys actually like pushed back or turned around or even shut down? I don't think PvE was really their main focus. After Jeff left, after pretty much, did he leave before or after the launch of, I think he left before the launch of Overwatch 2. But once it was found out that he was leaving, I was like, well, I'm not going to be that interested in Overwatch 2. And I tried, man. I played for the past 8 seasons. I gave it a chance. I think I played a little bit of season 9. No, I didn't. I played some of season 8. I played 1 through 7, played parts of 8, gave up on it. In fact, I deleted Overwatch 2 off of my PC. I skipped season 9, and I'm not even that excited for season 10. And they're trying to make it seem like it's such a good thing. Like, hey, we're going to, for season 10, we're going to introduce a new hero, and we're going to make him free, like completely free. You don't have to worry about grinding in a battle pass. Like, yeah, that's what it should have been the first time around. I'm not going to applaud you for doing something that we've been telling you to do since before Overwatch 2 came out and you announced that characters are going to be for free in a battle pass, mind you, but still part of a battle pass I have to grind through. When we were used to, as soon as a hero comes out, that same day, everybody can play as that hero. Or you can just give us money and you can unlock the hero right away instead of grinding in a battle pass, which is really scummy, but we don't care because free to play. I am not giving I'm not giving Blizzard props for whatever season 10 brings. They're already screwing up all kinds of metas. Anybody who's kept up with Overwatch 2, every other week, it feels like they're talking about, oh yeah, we're doing buffs and debuffs. We're going to debuff this character we just buffed and blah, 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 blah. And now they're talking about, we're thinking about implementing a system where you can ban the characters. The whole point of Overwatch 2 was the characters. It's a hero shooter. When you start having the ability to ban characters, it kind of takes away what made the game unique in the first place. Instead, let me choose what modes I want to play. Not everybody likes push. I like push, but not everybody likes push, and I understand why. Let people filter out push from the game modes that they don't want to play. Me, personally, I don't want to do capture points. Some of them are just, they're shit. Some of the maps for those those game modes are shit, and I don't want to play them. Let me filter that out. I don't want to do that. Let me play other modes. And now they want to do this whole thing with hack and quick play, which sucked, and they're just ruining things. And I'm going to go ahead and draw back to what they're talking about PvE. It goes to show just how incompetent everything with Overwatch 2 has been. It has been piling up. So to hear about the whole PvE thing does not surprise me. I saw it coming when they struggled to bring missions in to one of their events. They were like, yeah, you're going to get 3 missions every few weeks. It's like, well, that's really stupid. Oh, you have to pay for the missions, by the way. They're not actually part of the event. You have to pay for them. So now for the people who actually did pay for those 2-3 event missions that they actually released, what are they going to do about it? Are they going to keep doing that? And once every, in 3 missions every 18 months, that is absolute bollocks. I am not paying for that, and I'm glad other people aren't paying for that. And you know what? Honestly, I'm glad the PvE is dead. I hope it truly is gone so they can focus on screwing up the rest of Overwatch 2.
Well, there's a lot to go through there. That was a hell of a rant. I want to first go back. Let's get the stuff about the game out of the way. Like the game itself, because you did mention you don't want the ability to ban heroes. I kind of get why you would, like, why you would want it, though, because it reminds me a lot of Siege. Like, you play ranked and you ban a character for that round. There's a little bit of strategy in that. I think what you're saying, though, is, like, Overwatch was the game that you were free from all that. Like, it is purely, you have the characters you got, you use the team comp that you want. There's no banning. It's free to go. Like, go with whoever. But yeah, banning and introduces that sweat, that sweatiness, I guess. Even more sweatiness. Overwatch is a sweaty game to begin with, but...
It is, even in quick play. But the thing is, that ruins the fun of Overwatch is you can play your favorite character. I can't play my favorite character anymore because somebody didn't like that character and had him banned. It's like, well, that's stupid. I like playing as Lucio. Nah, I don't like Lucio because he has the ability to... And this is what a lot of Lucio players do. During the final six, when you're in overtime, during the final seconds, if you're pushing a robot, or not the robot, but if you're pushing an objective, you can use Lucio to just grind around the objective over and over again. You can do the same thing with Hamboy, the little hamster. And you can keep the overtime clock from winding down just for doing that, from circling around the objective and people missing you until your teammates show up and hopefully do a team wipe. So I get why people are like, oh, I don't like people playing as Lucio. The thing is, every character has a counter. That's what makes Overwatch fun to me. It's like everybody has a counter. And yeah, get good at more than just one character. Okay, get good at least one or two tanks. Me, I'm good with Junker Queen and I'm good with Orisa, which granted, those two are pretty easy to play. When it comes to healers, I'm good as a Zenyatta. I'm good as Lucio and I can play Mercy. A lot of people play Amora because she's more DPS heal. Okay, I'm also good with Brigitte, but I don't really play her that much because they keep buffing her down to the point to where she's just a squishy.
Hey, here's another thing, though. Like, I get you in terms of quick play and those kind of modes, arcade, stuff like that. I think where I'm at is, yeah, don't make a ban character option for those modes. In ranked is the only place where I would even consider it.
And the thing is, a lot of, and I've seen people who does ranked, they're like, I don't like that. Like, they've done it before to where they experimented one character a week wouldn't be playable.
That's the worst. I'd rather you just have the ability to ban a character than to be like, oh yeah, once a week, we're going to pick a new character that's not going to be available for the whole week. And then you just can't play as him. Instead of, hey, you know what, at least the other team is banning a character that I can't play. That at least, to me, you know what I mean? There's at least a little bit of strategy in that, other than Blizzard going, well, we don't think you should use, I forgot the character's name now, Reinhardt this week. So you don't get to use Reinhardt the entire week. That's stupid. Like, so at the bare minimum, I think, banning characters is something where I think it would have to be ranked only, kind of like Siege. But I'm not opposed to it.
Right, but see, that ruins rank because, hey, I'm ranking up as a character I'm good as. Why would I spend time with characters I'm not that good at when I'm trying to like reach Grandmaster and whatnot, when I'm trying to reach Diamond? In comp, you want to play your best. You want to play your best character. You want to play your best hand. You know, so doing it in comp, I always feel that's a terrible idea. I don't play Siege, but I've seen the way people play. And with each character having different abilities, okay, that kind of makes sense because there's no real counter to that. You know, it's like, oh, you get hit 2 or 3 times, you're done. You don't have a chance to actually see what's going on, calculate, and then change course, change plans. And Overwatch, you can do that. If you see someone playing Reinhardt and you're playing a different character, you're like, okay, I should play someone who could shut down Reinhardt. I should get somebody like a Zenyatta who can throw a Discord and orb on him. So that way when my team does jump Reinhardt, his healers aren't going to be able to heal him as much. Like they're able to do extra damage to him. Or maybe I want to help a Genji out. And, oh, you're gonna pick Orisa. Genji can get behind Orisa. I should be able to switch from one DPS to another. And that's what made Overwatch fun, was the point that you could change out your characters like you do in Call of Duty with your weapon load, with your loadout. If I see somebody playing a certain character, I should be able to switch at any time to a counter. And that's what made that's where the strategy comes in. The strategy comes in switching up to counter the opposing team. I've done it multiple times where me and my team are getting our butt kicks, I will switch to a different character. And that's why you should get good with more than just one character. Everybody has their favorite. I get that. That's fine. But you still be willing to switch another character to counter and help your team win. That's what makes Overwatch fun in the first place. Now that you're going around saying, oh, no, you can ban this character, it's like, no, you're just like, oh, I'm going to play as this character, so let's ban my counter. And I don't like that.
Yeah, I would say with Siege, I get where you're coming from. Siege, there are counters, but the problem is that it's round based. So right. Yeah, you'll have a counter. You'll be like, oh, this character's here, I can stop him using this character. But you would have to wait till you respawn in the next round. To whereas Overwatch, it's so much faster paced. It is,
yeah.
You're just constantly respawning. It's more real time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's weird to say because that's an entire different genre. But it feels more like a real time strategy than what Siege is. Siege is just more round based that you're trying to figure out how to counter a character. And that's something about these hero shooters like Siege and Overwatch that I absolutely love. And yeah, man, I think a lot of what you said in your rant, your first rant, because you've went on a few in this story topic.
It's your fault for bringing in Overwatch.
You're the one who pitched the story, but besides the point, your first rant, I think you had a lot of good points about, Overwatch 2, this has been marred from the start. You saw the game director leave, which is a huge red flag from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And then you see that PvE doesn't come out at launch, and then you go like, wait a minute, that's the whole point of why you're doing this. Everything about the PvP, and it's clear that there's just not a focus on it. And you read this story about the developers. I want to read through one of the quotes that I just said in the blurb from this Kotaku article. Some executive goes, but is it Blizzard quality? It's always leadership or game directors deciding they need to spend extra time. So honestly, if they could have just made any kind of decisions, the game would have shipped out years ago. That one quote is very telling to me. Because I'm not just trying to let all the developers... Because I don't know, man. I'm not in the room. I don't know how... I honestly don't. I don't know how hard or how lackluster developers were making this game. I really don't. But I think this one quote does go, but a big part of the blame needs to go to the leadership at Blizzard.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's a lot of talk in this Kotaku article about how difficult PvE was because this game was originally made for PvP. And there's literally a quote here that says it was understood that PvP was the core of the game's success. Saying everybody still cared about PvE, though, and that includes team leadership. So even the people we were just making fun of cared about adding PvE. It's just, I wonder if this was from the concept just wasted resources because of what Overwatch is, and them just trying to go, well, we could do a PvE expansion, and then moving on and moving forward with that. It just never really working out the way they did, way they thought it would in the concept phase.
Yeah, maybe they got really excited about what their new engine can do. And I was like, yeah, we can do all this cool stuff in theory.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the future is for Overwatch. I honestly, part of me, I kind of agree with you when you're like, yeah, I hope that this is the end of PvE because now Blizzard can focus on PvP and fix it. Because, yeah man, Overwatch 1, while it hit some, let's just say speed bumps over the years.
Yeah, it has some sour notes.
But for the most part, it was a game that was surviving. In the same way we were talking about Siege earlier, that I think Siege was surviving. And yeah. Siege is still alive and doing well today. Instead, Overwatch decided to do a sequel that nobody was really all too excited for. And every decision they've made since announcing that sequel has been met with criticism and skepticism. So maybe getting rid of the PvE element will finally be that thing for the Blizzard team and the Blizzard leadership. It seems like that's a big part of this. To finally go like, okay, let's go back to our roots, guys. Let's go back to our roots. Let's get Overwatch back in a good place to where we are one of the leaders in multiplayer.
Yeah, and don't try that whole, oh, what if we make a battle royale game? let's do.
Don't throw that out. You're speaking to
the next thing. Hey, man, they're already doing Capture the Flag and Free for All, so it's only a matter of time for they're like, let's just take all our DPS characters and let's just do a battle royale.
But I hope it works out, man, because Overwatch is honestly, I look at the games like Overwatch, and I'm sorry, Siege is the only one to me that compares those top-tier hero shooters.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it more than Siege, and I really like the tactical nature of it. I would rather play Overwatch in its prime than, honestly, Call of Duty over the last 10-plus years.
Oh, to be honest, yeah, me too.
It's one of the best multiplayer games I've ever played, and it's for a lot of reasons. Like, the characters were fun. They had cool abilities, like you were talking about. I like the strategy that goes into it, and it's one of the reasons, going back to Siege, that's the reason I do like Siege, is, it's slower paced, but there's a little bit of strategy into it. Like, how are you going to defend this base? How are you going to, just wall off something to where intruders can't come in and flank you? Like, all that stuff's really cool to me, and it feels like an evolution than the typical Call of Duty, let's run around and just shoot people in the head, Mountain Dew, let's go.
Yeah, shoot a place with Mountain Dews.
Yeah, so I want this to be good.
Look, one day I will go back to Overwatch 2 the same way I did with Fortnite. I know I will. What that entails, I don't really know. What they're gonna have to do, I'm not really sure, but I'm sure I'll go back to it one day.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people went back to Star Wars, Michael.
Ooh, you more poor specifically souls.
Star Wars Battlefront.
It is not good for multiplayer fans, man.
Nah, not this week. I'll take this last one too, because this is a very short story. Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection releases first patch after poor launch. This is pretty much an old story by the time this episode's going to be out. So we're just going to assume that everybody listening to a podcast like this probably knows the troubles that Asper's Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection is going through. If you don't know, here's a very oversimplified TLDR. The Star Wars Battlefront remasters launched. It's been pretty widely panned online. Michael, I imagine, how bad is it over on Twitter X?
So this is one of the times that you're going to wish that you kind of had it.
Yeah, it kind of is one of those times because I wanted to see the reaction.
Somebody was saying that they took a finished game and unfinished it to release this game. And yeah, did you know that this game is like 67 or 73 gigabytes big?
That's absolute. Why? Why? Just why?
nobody can figure out how or why is as big as it is when it's not a complete remake. They didn't do it Resident Evil style.
It's just remasters.
Nobody
can
figure out if you can call it a remaster.
I felt like bad putting that in the blurb because I was like, I don't even know if this is actually a remaster.
Yeah, I know. It feels like a buggy re-release because they did include both Star Wars Battlefront 1 and 2 in the same package, which was pretty cool. But they suffered from servers missing from the menu. Like, people couldn't find all the servers for some reason. Like, they were just gone. Like, people saw 3, 4, 5 servers out of what was supposed to be, like, dozens of them. And there was also control issues, bug issues to where if when you died, the camera would just spaz out. When you try to spawn in, it would spaz out. There was also some audio issues. I was watching Angry Joe's gameplay of it. And for him, one of the issues that he had was on a certain level, every time he died, the volume, the volume in his game would get lower and lower. Like, it was a strange bug. And there's also one place he went to that played, I think he was on Dagobah, and they kept playing the canteen music instead. And it was just such a weird bug. And there's all kinds of nonsense that's going on, Taylor. And the first patch, this patch was supposed to fix like server issues and to help people get more of them. I haven't seen anybody on X/Twitter talk about if there's actual any improvements. But yeah, man, they somehow managed to take two beloved games, add in bugs, and forget how servers work.
So that's how that's going. Like, yeah. I said, it's been pretty widely panned online, probably along the same levels that the GTA trilogy remasters were getting dragged when that game was released.
I don't know if Michael,
you
kind of
painted the picture for me, so I appreciate that, man. You really did, because that was really my question. It's like, what are your thoughts on all this? And you just laid it out. You're like, here it is, here's all the issues. And I don't think you got through all of them. There's a controversy with
man,
like some kind of modder, something with the game used a mod that it wasn't supposed to. It took a modder's worker.
I'm not sure about that one.
Okay, so I just threw something out there. I hope.
Oh my goodness! I gotta look that up now. Oh my goodness!
Just for the sake of not just throwing something a fake story out there. So if you can go ahead and give that a Google while I guess talk about this game. I can't believe they fucked this up. To me, this was one of those games that was an easy layup, and somehow they just fell flat on their face. I have no idea. This was like in Space Jam, where Michael Jordan is jumping from the free throw line, and he just falls flat on his face.
So I've already found out about that that mod.
Okay.
So according to Aspyr, apparently it was a mod that was seen in the trailer that was a mistake that made it into the final cut.
So just adding to the overwhelming issues the game's had.
Yeah, which this isn't the first time a studio has used modders' work.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. Again, I cannot believe the Aspyr. Isn't this is the same studio that was going to be working on the KOTOR remake?
No, they got pulled from that.
Yeah, that's what they were.
Yeah.
Working.
Oh yeah. No, yeah, no, yeah. They were working on that, and the game
ain't
got
happening
canceled
anymore. But I know it wasn't already, but that's, yeah, that was double down, nail in the coffin, burn the bridge. Any kind of statement you want to make about it, that is not happening anymore after this launch. And it is absolutely wild. I don't understand how you fucked this up. I really don't.
Man. And, you know, I don't like talking bad about companies. I mean, I do, but I don't.
Well, we have the Aspyr stories.
Yeah. Aspyr has not been the best when it comes to these kind of games. You know, they really are that kind of like that low budget company that you go to. You're just like, hey, we need to get something out there. And a lot of people are calling this game a cash grab. And honestly, that's usually hyperbole. But from the way this looks, no, it does really feel like a cash grab.
Well, you know what wasn't a cash grab?
What's that?
Dead Rising Watchtower.
My goodness.
Last week,
this
I brought to Michael's attention that there was a live-action adaptation of the Dead Rising franchise. That led to one hell of a rabbit hole that carried on after we ended the episode. Trust me, people. There was a long bit in last week's episode. It was even longer. I cut some stuff out. Like, this went a long time of Michael going down a rabbit hole. There was not one, but two Dead Rising movies, and he just could not believe it. So,
it was wild.
After I edited that episode, and then I posted it, I ended up looking up Dead Rising Watchtower. And then I ended up watching Dead Rising Watchtower. So I floated the idea out there to Michael. I was like, hey man, let's bring some Nerdstop movies into Power Up and Game. And you agreed to it because I think you were just looking for an excuse to watch this movie. And you got it.
I was going to say, for excuse to get you back involved, man. That's all. You know, it's part of your wish list of movies to be turned into, games to be turned into movies. I felt this was a service to you.
Not particularly what I was planning. not really what I wanted out of it, but we'll get to it. So what we're going to do to end this show is we're going to do a Dead Rising Watchtower review / retrospective. It'll be like our retrospectives over at Nerdstop Movies, but more bite-sized, I guess. And we're going to talk full spoilers about this movie. So if you care to ever watch Dead Rising Watchtower, I guess, we don't really have anything else important, I think. So we appreciate you listening. We appreciate your time. If you don't care about spoilers, or if you've seen this movie, man, you're going to be in for a wild ride, because I went into this thing, Michael, expecting a train wreck. When it ended, I got to say, I'm not saying this is a good movie, but it wasn't bad. And I was surprised. Like, this might be actually a bad movie, but I expected it to be so much worse than what it is. What are your thoughts on Dead Rising Watchtower generally?
I had fun with this movie, man. I was surprised with this. I was like,
it's really fun. It's weird. I'm sorry. Like, I needed somebody to confirm that for me, because I was the whole time I'm like,
you're right.
Dude, this seems like it was made by people who played the games. There was some unique camera shots. I wasn't a fan of Frank West in this movie. We'll get to it. Trust me.
Oh, I was. I loved it. I loved it.
But Taylor, there was a lot of stuff in this film that, man, I wasn't overly excited. I don't like... Who's the main character's name? Chase Carter? Chase Carter. I had to write it down so I didn't forget. And yeah, it's a fake name, but it's a really stupid fake name. I think that's the point. But at the same time, it's a movie that didn't take itself too seriously, knew what it was, and had fun with it. And I can appreciate that, man. This is a surprisingly fun time.
Yes, it was, man. I was like, you know, I don't know what Taylor's thinking about this, but I'm enjoying myself. Like, this is actually kind of fun. This isn't bad. Like, I was going in like you. I was waiting for the worst of it, to where I was like, all right, this is going to be the part where we're going to have some fun making fun of it. Like, oh my goodness, the budget was terrible. The acting was terrible. The zombies looked bad, blah, 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 blah. And the worst, you could tell they did have some budget restraint. But we'll get to that in a moment when we start talking about the visuals. But yeah, generally, this was fun, man. This was a fun watch. I was like, I know they're going to drop the ball in the sequel, but I kind of want to watch the sequel now. And I'm kind of glad they went with another character other than Frank West, because watching this, I'm like, okay, I see what you're doing. I like it. And this was the right way to go. I am surprised how well done this movie was. It was done by people who either loved the idea of Dead Rising, watched their kids play Dead Rising, was like, this looks stupid, I want to make a cheesy B zombie movie out of it. Or people who really loved it was like, oh my goodness, I love the first Dead Rising, I would love to do a movie. And they found people who actually wanted to make a corny, cheesy, live-action Dead Rising. I love this movie, Taylor.
You're kind of getting into my final thoughts. I wanted to go into this.
Ooh, really? Okay, go ahead.
We get into final thoughts, but I'm going to go ahead and say it now.
Go ahead.
I 100% agree with you. I think this is exactly how you need to make a Dead Rising or a Resident Evil. Embrace the cheesiness, please. Make it fun.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you can't get serious. Surprisingly, this movie gets serious at certain points. And I'm not saying that it was Oscar-worthy or even great, but you can have serious moments in this movie. You can have dramatic twists and whatnot. But you gotta acknowledge that, like, hey, these video games, they're video games, man. Like, they're fun and they're cheesy. And when they're adapted, you gotta keep what makes the game unique, what made it so beloved. And I think for Dead Rising and Resident Evil, for that matter, it's that B-level horror that's just, it's fun, man. I hate to keep using that word, but that's really what this movie kind of was.
It is.
It's that Romero, like that George Romero kind of, you know, yeah, that they're just harkening back to, and you know Resident Evil was harkening back to. And yeah, man, it's just, it's absolutely what I wanted out of Dead Rising, but not with the resources. And that's where, going to last week, and this is where I was going to say my final thoughts, I pitched like, oh yeah, Amazon could just give the green light on, like, if they can acquire the rights to Dead Rising and make a TV show and base it off the first game and give them the resources, let it be in this tone. And give them the money to go all out with it. You got a fucking hit on your hands. I'm serious. Like, this, if this had a budget behind it to actually get something done, I think it would have been actually really good. And I cannot believe I'm saying this. I'm very surprised. I feel like I'm crazy for saying it.
No, man, you're not crazy, because it exactly is it. This is what you have to do with something like Dead Rising. You don't try to make it too serious. You get goofy with it, because the game was goofy. The game didn't take it seriously.
And it didn't
seriously.
Get too goofy. Like, there's a level of goofy it's jumping the shark. It might have got close to it, but it never jumped the shark.
When it comes to one of the psychos, I was like, this guy is taking a lot of pain, but I love that, because it's like the game where, for some reason, the psychos were able to take an inhumanly amount of pain. And I was like, you know what? Any other movie, if what they were doing with this certain cycle, the final boss, the final guy, if any other movie did that, it would look dumb as hell. But if you play Dead Rising and you see this movie, you're like, yeah, they really stuck to the game.
It's a psychopath boss. For worse.
Yeah, this is cool.
The only thing I wanted out of it more is more psychopaths, other than the motorcycle gang leader. I thought Maggie was going to be one. She is played by Virginia Madsen, which, by the way, Virginia Madsen and Dennis Haysbert being in this movie, I appreciate that they're here, but I got to ask, how did you get involved in this movie? Like, it's a weird project to get involved in, you two. But I'm glad that you were here, because you're great.
Maybe they also played the game or had kids who played the game and was like, you know what? This is so stupid and cheesy. I want in.
Rob Riggle, I can get. I can see Rob Riggle just being talked into it.
Oh,
I
think he'll do anything goofy. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he voiced Frank West in Dead Rising 4. So I'm not sure. I don't remember when Dead Rising 4 came out. But this came out in 2015, I believe.
Yeah.
So,
and the sequel was like 16 or something.
Yeah, I think this was along the lines of like when Dead Rising 3 was coming out. So Rob Riggle actually plays Frank West in live action before I think he voiced him in the game. Which is kind of funny.
Okay, yeah. Dead Rising 4 happened in 2016. Yeah. So not that far.
Riggle did voice him, right?
I will check that out.
Okay. But yeah, man, the visuals, yeah, let's go ahead and get into the visuals, man, because I was surprised at, with the limited budget, it not looking as hokey as I thought it was going to. Like, the zombies look pretty alright.
Yeah.
The zombie kills were pretty good. Like, the interactions with the zombies, for the most part, really good. Like, it felt, again, like we've been saying this entire review, like Dead Rising. They were making weapons, and the only problem I had with the weapon creation in this movie was at the end, where Crystal, the co-lead, She comes out with two chainsaws. Chase comes out with like this.
Awesome.
Well, we'll get there. Like, Chase comes out with this created weapon, merging and stuff together. She just comes out with two chainsaws. Highly impractical in use.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just use one, Crystal. Just use one chainsaw. And I'm very surprised she just didn't die off immediately, because she's going after the last psychopath with both of them, just wildly swinging like she's the Leatherface.
Yeah, oh, like,
no, you shouldn't be using this. This is not going to work for you. But yeah, for the most part, the visuals, the weapon creation, it was, I also added that in because I feel like it's just part of the visual, because it made it feel like Dead Rising to me.
Yeah, as for the visuals, you can tell that they had some budget restraints, but you know what? They used what little money they had to great effects. The worst thing I can say is some of the explosions looked pretty cheap. Like, they look like they were done in After Effects. And the way the zombies were eating people, you can tell they didn't have the budgets to have flesh being torn off of people. You can see the zombies like bite into people, and you might see some CGI blood spurt out. But in the end, you see that they don't actually yank anything off. You don't see them chewing on any flesh. It looked kind of cheap. It looked like if you and your friends went out and did a video where your friend would bite somebody and, oh no, I went down. And you see the back of the zombie's head gnawing on people, which that kind of threw me off. I was like, oh man, I want to see zombies tear people up. But at the same time, the zombies themselves look cool. They use their budget wisely. Makeup department did a great job because the zombies looked pretty cool. They didn't look out of place. They didn't look too much like what we see now with the zombie movies, where they would just look human and dead at the same time. Like, you could see who was been zombies for a while and who was freshly new to being a zombie. It was really cool. And yeah, sometimes even when they were shooting guns, you could tell that they had like the After Effects flashes on them. But I still think they used their budget well. They had some cool wide shots. They on location, really cool. You know, they even had scenes where people were driving cars. Like, oh, snaps. They had not a car chase, but they had one where characters would get in the cars and drive off high speed, and the camera would be on the car. So you get kind of like this third-person Grand Theft Auto kind of look to it. And like, they had plenty of cool stunts, you know, car crashes and whatnot. They used the budget wisely. I'm not mad about how they did it. I think they used it wisely. I think they were smart with what they did. They knew that, hey, we don't have a lot of money, so let's do these cool things and put all the money into that. Makeup, let's put into that to make cool zombies. We're going to crash a few cars. Let's use our budget to have some stuntman to turn corners and crash the vehicle into other cars and whatnot. Okay, we want to show that this is a real city. Let's do a wide shot of this empty city with a dozen zombies running after our heroes. And when it came down to the props, oh, props to the prop team. The way they made the weapons look like they do in the game, including when the characters would just grab a couple things and literally duct tape them together to make it look like the weapon from the game. I loved it. I was giddy. I was like, you know what? They know what they're doing. They actually love the cheesiness of Dead Rising. And they showed it. They put it into every screen. Some of the Easter eggs that they had in there, like the Frank statue, I thought was really cool. The little Mega Man Lego head that you can get in the game. They had it on a shirt. They had one sitting on a counter in a screen in one of the frames.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun Easter eggs.
Oh yeah, they even did a thing where Frank would take like a stop sign or a traffic cone and pop it on one of the zombies' head. They did that scene. I was like, okay, this is cool. And the way they did it was, it wasn't him just running to a zombie and putting it on there just for fun. Like, he did it because he had a reason to, looking for a weapon. It's like, oh, there's this cone, and he popped it on a zombie's head to get away. I thought they did it in a smart way. And I was like, this is really fun. They're pulling out everything you can do in the game with the exception of making food. They had scenes where, like, hey, we need to eat. But it wasn't like oh man, I'm tired. Let me eat this sandwich that I just made out of this fridge, and all of a sudden I'm full health again. Like, they didn't go that far. They didn't make it that corny and cheesy. But the stuff that they did within the game, the way they incorporate gameplay from the game into the movie, I thought was so well done and so fun to watch.
Yeah. The voice actor who played Frank in Dead Rising 4 is Ty Olson. So it's not Rob Riggle. I thought for years it was Rob Riggle. I probably saw the trailer for this years ago and just thought it was.
Like, you just wanted Rob the whole time?
No, I didn't. And let's just go ahead and get into it here, because one of the big complaints I have about this movie is Rob Riggle as Frank West. I like Rob Riggle. I do. I think he is a good comedic actor who's been in a bunch of stuff. But, man, he's not Frank West to me. He really isn't. He played him... I know they made Frank more comedic as the franchise went on, especially Dead Rising 4. But I don't know, man. Rob Riggle played up the comedy to the point to where, like, I get it. Like, he survived the Willamette. So it was a thing where I think where they were trying to go is, like, Frank is a guy who survived the zombie apocalypse. He was the hero of Willamette. But it also kind of broke his brain. So I get where they were going with it, but I just don't like the performance, because Rob Riggle plays Frank in a way to where I don't really like Frank. I like Frank because I played as Frank in Dead Rising.
Yeah.
I don't like Frank in this movie because Rob Riggle's performance is just like, here's how you survive a zombie apocalypse. And why are you not here? You should be the main character of this thing. And I'm not saying like this OG character that they made here, Chase Carter, he's a ripoff of Frank, but honestly, I think he kind of works. So I'm not saying that them making a new character, this is a rare case where I think it actually worked.
Yeah.
If they were to do this again and take another stab at it, you definitely, I would say, go with the game franchise. Don't try to go with the original story again. But for this one instance, I do like the character of Chase Carter, but Rob Riggle as Frank just came across as just, like, tacked on for me.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think I see, for me, I like Frank more as this, like, Bruce Campbell kind of figure. That grizzled journalist who's looking for the story. That's very charming, but pretty sleazy at the same time.
Okay, well, the thing is, granted, in a later game, they did make Frank more of an asshole. From the way they portrayed him here, that's the way I remembered him. So if I saw this before before I played the other games, I'd probably been in the same boat with you. But because I do know in the later games, they do kind of make him more of a stickler, more of an asshole, because he keeps going through this. So he's like, I'm kind of tired. So, Taylor, I just looked it up, and Dead Rising Watchtower is actually canon to
It takes Dead place Rising franchise between 2 and 3.
Yeah.
I had to look this up, too, because I also wanted to see what Endgame was about, like how that's been received.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But if you don't know, real quick, Dead Rising, there's a sequel to Dead Rising Watchtower called Dead Rising Endgame, and it basically takes everything that's kind of good about Dead Rising Watchtower from the scenes I've seen of it, and taking an entire character out of the story for a reason I don't understand. Crystal's not in Endgame, and you think she would be, considering, you know, how major a character she is in this one. But yeah, the sequel wasn't really good, but supposedly both take place between 2 and 3.
I was actually going to ask after we were done here if we were going to do any game just to see.
We can, but I don't think we're going to be as thrilled about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it does explain some things. Pup boy, hold on. I'm sorry, man. My dog.
Your puppy really wants to talk about Dead Rising Watchtower.
He really does. He wants to put his two cents in there because he was here with me the whole time.
we're going a bit long, so I kind of want to combine these two topics we have here. Crystal and the other survivors / psychopaths. I really like Crystal as a character. I think she was a great co-lead. She helped drive the story, she had her own character, and she also helped Chase's story out. So, I think she was just really the glue that really kept this movie going.
Yeah, at first I was kind of annoyed with her, because like, oh, she's going to be the mean girl, I'm better than you character. But it turns out that she had a reason for why she didn't want to be around Chase and Maggie, and why she was trying to get out herself. And as that revealed, you're like, oh, okay, now I understand this character. So yeah, she actually had a big part in the plot. I'm always down for tell your story through your characters. And I think they did that great with Crystal.
Yeah, and again, I think it was a thing where this isn't a movie, too, where the co-lead just exists to be the love interest of the main lead, even though clearly that's where they were going in this movie. But also, like I was saying, it's something to where she had her own story. She has her own personality. Like, she did feel like an actual full-fledged character who also helped drive home the character arc for our main character, Chase. So, it's not an overly deep story. It's not an overly deep character arc. This is, like we're saying this entire review, cheesy horror. That's what this is. But man, they did a really good job with it. And I, like you said, tell the story through your characters. And I think they did that for the most part. I think the characters in this film were way better than I thought they were going to be going out, including Maggie, played by Virginia Madsen.
I think she's going to be in the movie as long as she did.
Same. When she got introduced, that's when I went, oh, dude, they're doing psychopaths. She's going to be the first psychopath. Not really. Like, I think you can technically claim that, but she doesn't really survive to fight the protagonist. Instead, she just gets killed later on in the film. And then she helps bite the psychopath at the end.
Yeah, and yeah, the way that they introduced her, it did look like she was going to be the one to lose her mind, and she had a good reason to lose her mind.
But it was also very Dead Rising. Like, it's that dark and twisted nature that makes you go, oh, no, I'm going to have to deal with this threat. Because I'm trying to also spell out the plot here, because I don't think a lot of people have seen Dead Rising Watchtower. And if you are this far into the review, I assume you kind of want a few details. Highly recommend you actually just watch this movie. It's fun. But
it is.
When they're trying to escape, they find this woman with her dead daughter, and it's very much, it's not spelled out to the audience, but pretty obvious that she just had to kill her daughter because she turned. And the zombie wasn't working. So they all three escape, Crystal, Chase, and Maggie, the mother. And then they end up crashing, and you go like, okay, when's that other shoe going to drop? When's she going to crack here? Because she starts talking like her daughter's still alive. And that's that Dead Rising level of, oh, this is the psychopath boss battle. This is somebody who, when the zombie outbreak happens, something just snapped. But it never really happened. So I'm not disappointed in it, but I feel like it was possibly a missed opportunity.
You know, I think the reason they did it was because they had a plan for that end scene that we were talking about.
Yeah, that's why I'm not disappointed in it. I like the way it ended.
Yeah. I thought Maggie was going to turn into a bad person, or Maggie wasn't going to be a movie as long as she was. But yeah, I don't know. They somehow managed to make Maggie a more human character than our protagonist. I don't know how they did that.
Well, because that's kind of the story of the main character, to where he's caring about the clicks, and not, it's the whole thing with Jordan, who is his camera woman, to where she's like, we're journalists, we're supposed to be covering a story, and he's like, no, what's going to get the most clicks? And her story, but we haven't really talked about Jordan a whole lot. Jordan, I think, is the driving force with the main actual plot of the story.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Her plot feels like a B plot, but it also goes with the main plot, so it kind of feels like a 8.5 plot, if that's a thing.
Her character was pretty good too, but we're going a bit long. We got to get out of here, unfortunately. So I want to get into our favorite and least favorite moments, and I want to ask one last question, other than what are your favorite and least favorite moments, and that is, do you think this is a good adaptation of Dead Rising?
Absolutely, yes. This is absolutely what a Dead Rising movie should be. And I'm going to watch Endgame. I know it's going to be disappointing.
I probably will too, just to see it for myself. It's one thing to hear about it and read about it, I mean, but it's another thing for me to actually see it so I can actually
Because we thought this one was going to be bad.
I'll give it a chance.
Plus, it would be kind of good if it is bad. It would be kind of good to see how this one could have turned out bad. So it's like, what's a good Dead Rising movie and what's a bad one? And you can see like, this is it. This is proof of the two. So I'm going to watch it. But this is a great adaptation of Dead Rising. And if anybody ever tries to do another one, look at this film. Look at Watchtower.
Look at this and pour more money into it. That's essentially what you got to do. I think you get somebody more suited to play Frank West. That's about it for me. But that's just me for the iteration that I think I would personally want to see. Maybe I'm in the minority here. Maybe a lot of people like the comedic Frank West and Rob Riggle really worked. But I don't know. That's really my main complaint about it. Because, again, I think this is, like you said, a good adaptation of Dead Rising. For me, it's more so what we were saying last week. Like, what deserves the live-action treatment? I think this deserves another shot, because I think this is honestly...
Yeah.
If nothing else, I think this is a concept film to prove it could work.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. That's not a bad way of looking at it.
In terms of favorite, least favorite moments, though, my favorite moment in this movie is whenever Crystal and Maggie are trying to get out. And this is after the biker gang comes through and we see the couple get absolutely murdered. And Chase pretty much, it's his heroic moment where he's like, you know what? They're right. I need to, quit being a bitch, essentially. So he comes out with, like, these weapons. And that entire fight with those zombies, like that horde of zombies with Chase, is honestly my favorite part of the whole movie. Everything, like, there's something about it that just felt unique. The way it was shot, the way the entire scene was choreographed, it was just honestly the best part of the entire film. Like, I'm going to remember that. And I'm not saying it was like 10 out of 10 masterpiece, but I'm actually going to remember that scene
for a while because
it's something that was very creative. I would say the least favorite is that it has a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of that. I wish I just cleaned up the story and called it a day.
Because it did seem like they were building up to something.
So I wish I kind of just wrapped it all up and let that be it. But how about you, man? Favorite, least favorite moments, and then we can get out of here.
My favorite moments was definitely when Chase first came out of the loan shop, the pawn shop, just geared up. And we're just going ham with this makeshift hammer that was a sledgehammer that was hooked up to this mini chainsaw. And he was just going to town on zombies until he ran out of fuel. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's awesome. And I do like the way that the game, the movie also shows the weapons breaking. Like in the game, Crystal had a weapon that she was using to destroy zombies, and she used it to the point to where it broke apart. I was like, that's pretty cool. Those are my favorite moments. I'm sorry, I had two of them. My least favorite was when Chase came out of the pawn shop geared up, only because it didn't last long. And the way they did it, it was like, oh man, it seems like you're really going to have this big, fun,
So my bloody, favorite moment is scene. Your least favorite moment?
It is both my favorite and least favorite.
Oh, okay. Because it felt I see it.
Yeah, because it's a double-edged sword. Because it felt like a wasted concept. It could have been like the fun action moment of the movie to where he's just taking out a dozen zombies like you would in the game where you get surrounded and you do like a spin move or whatever. And also, they didn't do enough creative kills for me. I would like seeing some more cool creative kills. Chase coming out of the pawn shop is both my favorite and least favorite.
I can see that because it's somewhat deflating, because it's not like this huge, he kills all the zombies and they get out of their moment. It's more so as it starts out very heroic and then quickly he starts to lose all his weapons. And then it becomes this really, like I was saying earlier, this uniquely shot survival scene to where he's still taking out some zombies. And he like that's the scene you were talking about where he puts like a cone over a zombie's head. But the entire time, it's just intense and really, like, that scene, that's when I went, oh, yeah, this was made by people who played the games.
Yeah, people who actually cared, because that camera movement is not something you do if you're just being cheap. No, somebody got creative. It's like, yeah, we're going to do a one shot of him making his way through all these zombies in stupid, silly, creative ways. He's just stumbling about trying to find his way. He even used
gets the, on top of the bus, gets on top of cars the sign, to try to
get on the bus.
All that stuff is really cool.
And the whole shot is just tracking behind him and around him and above him. It's just like, this is really cool. Like this is a creative shot. Like this isn't something you do because, oh, we need to get the shot in real quick. So let's just get you stumbling about. No, it's like, hey, I have this cool idea that goes from the pawn shop to the middle of the street to around this bus, to inside the bus, on top of the bus, into an alleyway that leads us to a clown psycho. And it was just so cool how they stitched it all together.
I would have took that out of the beginning of the movie. That was pretty...
For as creative
as this movie got at times, that was the most uncreative part of the movie, to where they were like, let's do a flashback sequence to where we show what's happening and go, let's go all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah, I kind of
that's the one thing.
Yeah, I mean, it could be used for creative storytelling, but the way they did it didn't really serve the story.
Yeah, it didn't. But overall, again, this is a movie that I think both of us are kind of on the same page, save wavelength here. To whereas we went in expecting a train wreck, and instead we're like, man, I don't know what to even grade you. Maybe. I don't know where not to grade this like a 6 realistically, but because of how impressed I was that you weren't a train wreck and you were clearly made by people who cared to give it like a 7 or higher. So I don't know, man. We don't really give out grades over our Nerdstop movies, thankfully, so we're not compelled to here. But for real, if somehow you got this far in the episode and you have not seen Dead Rising Watchtower, Michael, I'm sure you'd agree with me, man. I think it's worth a watch.
Oh, yeah, because we didn't spoil everything, like the big mystery. But yeah, no, it is definitely worth watching. Like, give it a shot. It's on Tubi. So, you know, you don't have to have a subscription service for it. So there's no excuse.
All right, man. Let's get out of here. We kind of went past our time that we were supposed to be doing this.
I mean, but we knew once we did the Nurse Talk movie version, we were going to go on. Yeah, it was going
to take a while. So what are you working on and where can the people find you?
I am actually working on a new video about cloud services. I am currently trying out GeForce Now. I have been trying that out for the past couple of days. I do not have a favorable moment with it just yet. I am not really having a good time with it, but I am working on that. And if you are interested in learning more about my video, you can follow me on X/Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. You can also find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/FoxDaddy. That's FOXDADDY. And what about you, Taylor? What are you playing? Where can we find you? I'm sorry, what are you working on? Where can we find you?
Yeah, we're not doing where we're playing. That we don't have the time for that. But as for what I'm working on, I am working on these podcasts here. As for where you can find me, you can find me in our Discord, the link for which is in the description of this episode. Lastly, I just want to say, check out thenerdstash.com for all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and so much more, whether it's lists, guides, reviews, you name it, you can find it over on thenerdstash.com. Unfortunately, we will not have a new episode next week. Michael will be unavailable, but we will be back the week after. I want to thank Michael for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in, and we will see you in about 2 weeks.